We just stepped on their face with a hobnail boot and broke their nose.
How about them fucking dogs? That's what I told them.
Hope it doesn't take that long again. Go dogs.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 100 Sanford Podcast. It is your man Lamar Lovelace. I am here with my man George Foster. We got Graham Coffey coming up later. Gee, what is going on?
Like I say every week, man, and I'm glad to be able to say it. One, I done woke up today. They done messed up now. They let me wake up. You know, they let me wake up. Thank God for that. I done woke up this morning. And again, once again, the dogs won, man. We finished the regular season 12-0. Can't beat that.
Yes, sir. It's a beautiful day. Woke up.
Yeah.
Air in my lungs. I can breathe. I can shout. I can yell. I can do what I got to do. And like you said, man, I can get down with them dogs. 12-0, 8-0 in the conference, coming off that victory against Georgia Tech last week, 37-14, took care of business in clean old-fashioned. Hey, were you there in the building?
I had to be. They tried to, I can't say they worried me. I'd be lying if I said I was worried, but they kind of perturbed me. At the beginning, though, because I didn't feel like Tech should have been able to score.
You know, that first drive, man, was crazy.
I was like, what?
Right?
What's really going on? And it's like, you know, man, come on, man, get it up. And then, it took a little bit longer after that to get it right. And so I'm glad they got it together. I hate that the youngsters gave up the touchdown at the end. But, hey, it is – what it is, they completed the task, you know, the regular season task.
Mm-hmm.
8-0 in the conference, 12-0 overall. Still number one in the country. Earned a shot to go to the SEC championship and face the LSU Tigers this weekend. I'm excited. They kept up what they were supposed to do, and I'm excited about this weekend. We'll get into that a little bit later. I get to take my pops to that game since he wanted to go get the Rona for the Tennessee game.
Oh, man.
But hopefully he stay Rona free in the next 2 days.
Man, how's he doing? How's he feeling? I know that sometimes it takes a little time to come back and bounce back from the Rona.
He good. He didn't get knocked down, really. You know what I mean? He just, you know, he had to be safe and, you know, take it easy and mm-hmm. just miss that Tennessee game. He back in the mix this Saturday. Last time I took him to an SEC championship game, we played the same team and it was not a favorable outcome.
No, it was
not. and it got bad fast. Yeah. Like, man, y'all embarrassing me in front of my pops. What's going on?
In front of my wife, my kids.
Yeah, you're embarrassing me in front of the OG. You gonna do that? You gonna do that to me in front of the OG?
Was he like Friday? You want some of this, old man? No.
Man, they embarrassed me in front of the pops. Man, I tried to, you know, get my pops right. You know, take them to a high profile game, and right. the dogs let me down that year, man. But we came back strong.
Mm-hmm.
Got us a natty last year. We trying to do the same thing this year, man. So Lego.
Well, let's not be remiss not to tell the fans and tell every listener 8-0 for the second straight year. Only mm-hmm. It's only been done two other times back to back 8-0. Undefeated in the conference, a great year for the Dogs. Some people expected it. Some people didn't. Nationally, people thought the Dogs were going to, you know, slip just a little bit just from losing 16 people to the NFL. But that's a testament to Kirby, the coaching staff, and these young men that have come back and done what they're supposed to do, led by Stetson Bennett, obviously, and also Nolan. You know, when Nolan came back, I thought that set a precedence real early that this team was going to be serious again because they're going to have that same mindset to want to come back, dominate, and keep the thing going. And they did that. So you gotta give big ups to them and all the guys that have come back in their senior year and continue to lead this team, including Chris Smith. I think that's a big deal too.
People that was a big about him.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, that secondary would have been tremendously young. Even with Ringo back there, I mean, it would have been Ringo's second year playing, but it would have been tremendously young in that secondary, and that probably would have caused a lot of issues. But I think Chris, you know, he sets everything up on the back end. He's a leader, a vocal leader in that locker room, and I think that helps tremendously. But like you mentioned, the last time you were in Mercedes-Benz Stadium, it was 37-10 LSU. And that's who we play this weekend. We got LSU this weekend in the SEC championship game, a 9-3 squad, 6-1 in the West. But they're coming off a loss against Texas A&M, a team that many thought Georgia would be playing in the SEC championship. Ooh. But they got throttled last week, 38-23.
Yeah, and expectations were high for that team, the Texas A&M team, just like expectation was high for Georgia. And – one team, you know, lived up to the expectations, one didn't. Let's back up a little bit, you know, about talk about expectations. I can't front leading up into the season and looking at the schedule. Now, granted, some teams turned out to be better than we thought. One of them would be Tennessee. But leading to the season, you know, looking at the schedule, I can't front. I expected them to win every game. And they end up doing that. What was your expectation leading up into the season? You know, just knowing everything, we're young, lost a lot of guys. I still figured, just looking at the schedule, that it should turn out how it turned out. I didn't expect Tennessee to be as good as they were, but I still, you know, I still expected them to, you know, win every game. How did you feel preseason?
You know what? I felt the same way. I didn't think that in a lot of ways, I didn't think they'd be as dominant as they were. I didn't think that I'd feel so comfortable, as we talked about for the last few weeks, never having a doubt that they were, you know, going to win the game. I didn't think that going into the season. I thought there was going to be some times we'd be tested. If we go back, I did believe Tennessee would be one of those teams that would actually jump up there.
That's right.
The West. I didn't think that they would win the West. I thought Alabama would still win the West. I did not like Texas A&M, regardless of
Tennessee's in the East.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's right. My bad. But I didn't think that they would actually win the conference at all. I didn't think that. I just thought that they would actually pose a challenge. When it comes down to it, though, I thought when we got to the SEC championship game, we would probably be playing Bama. I thought Bama would be playing a little bit better, having, you know, Bryce back, being healthy, getting some more weapons. Nick Saban, I mean, his team's a little bit older. And I thought that they would come back with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, but they haven't. They haven't, and that's what's surprising to me more than anything. And I mentioned this a couple weeks back. I said, you know, when you look at this team, it's young. But one thing about it, we mentioned, okay, Chris Smith, Nolan, Stetson, the culture. And I thought what Kirby said very early on, he thought this was his best coaching staff. This is their best coaching job that they've ever done. I got to say that, because
I agree.
At no point do you ever feel uncomfortable in a game. I just don't. I feel that they make the right adjustments. I feel that they go in with the right game plan, whether we like it as fans or not, right? We want to see them throttle a Georgia Tech, a Missouri, or Vanderbilt. We want to see them go in and score 50, but that's not what they're built to do. Kirby just says, hey, you know what? Let's go in and handle business, get out clean, get out healthy, not show all of our cards. And I think that's what has caused fans to kind of – and maybe even the national media. And we got a guest that's coming on a little bit later. We can ask him about it. But even the national media to say, is this team really that good? And I think they really are. They just choose not to be. They choose not to show all their cards. So, I'm like you. Early on, I thought that, okay, yeah, they could be that team, but will they get to the Natty? Will they get to the college football playoffs? I didn't know that. And right now they're showing that they can do that.
Yeah, I think you made some interesting points, some valid points a minute ago, talking about who returned with Nolan and Chris and all those guys, and even Stetson, because, you know, Stetson had an opportunity to, you know, just be done with it, you know, being that, you know, he's up in age, you know what I mean? I don't know if he figured he may have had an NFL shot. I don't know if if the coaching staff was pushing to get him back. So I didn't know if it was a given that Stetson would be back with us. You know, in hindsight, I'm so glad that he is.
Right.
You know what I mean? And but I said it all to say is we're very young, but they have some experience in key spots.
Yeah.
You know, the main spot being quarterback. You know what I mean? We got young linebackers, but a lot of times safeties are the leaders of defenses too, in my experience. And we got, you know, Chris back there in that. So, even Ringo. I wouldn't call him long in the tooth, but he's got experience. You know what I mean? So they have some experience in key places, and it's worked out well for them.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And even when you talk about Ringo, I think the other thing that's worked out for Kirby, this team, this staff, is getting these guys in early. A lot of people mm-hmm. discount and don't really think about those guys that commit early. They actually get mm-hmm. some playing time. They get some practice time with the team. And that's what happened with Ringo. He got that practice time, starts, guys like that, same thing.
Mm-hmm. That's big time, really big, because it's a lot to learn, especially on that defense. Mm-hmm. Just from what I've heard with the system that they run, that it's so much to digest. And because look at it now, we just now seeing some of these guys, you know what I mean? Michael plays some, but like he's playing even more now. You're starting to see Jones.
Marvin Jones Jr.
You're starting to see him on the field a little bit more.
Dylan Bell. Yeah. These young guys on offense.
Yeah, it takes time to learn and stuff, man. College ain't easy, man. There's just a lot going on, a lot of expectations. You're at Georgia, expectations are high. The standard. Kirby asks a lot of these guys. And then you got, you know, off the field, a lot is expected of these guys. Then you got at home, a lot is expected of these guys. And these guys' friend circle, there's a lot expected, you know. So these guys, you know, coming in, getting that extra time and that early time, it's good for them.
Yeah. And,
it's helping us.
Oh, yeah, it definitely helps. You know what I mean? Especially when these guys are able to come in and get acclimated as quick as possible. I mean, I know we as fans sometimes, and you as a former player, you're able to go and you're able to speak to some family members. But I know me, I have relationships with different players' families, you know, the moms, the dads, things like that. So I holler at them. I don't necessarily holler at the players. And I'm like, how's so-and-so? Oh, right. He's adjusting. He's adjusting. And I'm like, mm-hmm. okay, what do you mean by adjusting? Well, he's going through it. You know what I mean? So their ability to get these young guys in and get mm-hmm. them adjusted, get them acclimated, I can't give enough praise to Kirby and that staff, because they managed to do that. And at the same time, don't diminish from the culture. We talked about Texas A&M, right? Texas A&M, so many people at Texas A&M winning the West, possibly winning the Natty, all because of a recruiting class.
Right.
Enough can't be said about their culture. If they had a culture, they wouldn't have 15, 16 people in the portal right now, which they got half of that class leaving. So you got to give it up. We only lost one person.
Man, give a shout out to you know, guys, you know, support staff in different areas on the team. My boy Jonas Jennings, who I played with, you know, player development. He gets those guys ready to go on and off the field. He can give life example. You know, graduated. You know, very smart guy. He can give good advice to those guys. He comes from where a lot of those guys come from. Guys like Brian Gant, you know, he's been around the team for ages. You know, played for the Dogs as well, and it just helps to have the kind of got those kind of people and help these guys feel at home. Man, it's a major deal. I saw a video today of Keith Bullock on a podcast. I think it was the Raw Room with my youngster Darren Bates, played at Auburn. He was with the Rams when I was there scouting, and Bullock was talking about he was ready to go his freshman year. Like, right. He said he would call his brother early in the morning, 6 a.m. or whatever, and be like, man, I think I want to come home, you know, from Syracuse. I think mm-hmm. I want to come home. And his brother's like, what you going to do here? Such and such doing this, such and such doing that. You ain't nothing good going on back here. You need to stay. And, yeah. you know, I don't know who got to him and made it good for him, but he ended up staying, ended up being a first-round pick, one of the best Titans of all time. You know what I mean? So, you know, shout out to everyone involved with those guys at the UGA. It's hard to be productive as a youngster, and it's hard to stay focused when things not going your way. And they did all of that and along the way managed to go undefeated for the regular season. So a shout out to everyone else involved with the school, as well as, you know, the coaches and whatnot.
Think about it over the time period that they did it. I was just talking to my brother today. Mm-hmm. 2020 through now, you know how many like CEOs have gotten fired because they took over organizations and they couldn't, you know, withstand the firestorm of what's happening in life. Mm-hmm. I mean, these guys are doing what they're doing through COVID. They're doing it through the NIL introduction, they're doing it through the portal introduction, really going bananas and crazy. Right. So again, I'm like you, man, you got to give straight up shout out to the entire UGA staff, the players, the families, even the families, because they're in families. Their ears too, holding them down.
Big crowd out there for a senior day this past weekend. You know, it brought back memories of my own senior day, getting to run out on that field with your to see your parents, and you know, I was out there with my mom and I think probably Coach Dooley, Coach Rick at the time.
Did you cry?
I can't remember if I cried or not. You know what I mean? I'm not no macho man, but it takes a lot to, you know, to pull some tears out of me. But yeah. I definitely felt good. I tell you what, I probably cried the first game of that season because I had the cast on my arm and I couldn't play. I missed like the first 2-3 games, and when they ran out of that tunnel, I wanted to be out there so bad. But It ended wonderfully. But yeah, those guys got a chance to run out and, you know, cap off a career at Georgia between the hedges, their last game ever between the hedges. And salute to those guys, those seniors.
You know, real quick, because I know we just talked about an injury. How was the response for Nolan? Because they didn't show it on TV. They just showed a few guys, you know, they didn't really show too much of how the fans were responding for senior day. What was that response for Nolan? Because I know he can't play, you know, he's banged up and injured.
Well, I was en route. I think I was still outside of the stadium when it was going on. So I didn't see Nolan, but I'm pretty sure the crowd was insane for him. Everyone loves Nolan. They appreciate him coming back, you know. He brings that fire to the squad. So I'm pretty sure it was great. I like that he's still around bringing the energy to the guys. And I know he's going to be, they're going to have to make sure he don't pass out Saturday. I know he's going to be amped up Saturday in that Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Yeah, he's going to be charged up, man. I mean, we're talking about the LSU game, but there is, you know, some other things going on in national, from a national perspective for the Dogs. I mean, the college football playoff rankings came out, still number one in the college football rankings. Michigan moved up to number two after walloping Ohio State in Ohio State in the Horseshoe. Yeah, man. You got USC at 4. I'm missing who's three.
TCU.
TCU. Oh, man, I don't know why I have my notes at LSU. Yeah. Is thinking about them. And Ohio State at 5 and Alabama at 6, which a lot of people were saying, you know what I mean? If TCU slip up, if USC slip up, then you got Ohio State and Alabama that'll slide in there. You know they're trying to get Big Stick Nick back up in that joint.
Hey, man. If Alabama slide in at number 4, man, I wouldn't know what to do. We'll match them out though. But still, man, that'd be cool. I'd also like to face USC though. People really think it's sweet over here. they really think it's sweet, especially the West Coast cats. They really think it's sweet. We tried to tell them with the Oregon game. We tried to tell you it was sweet, and you learned. You came out east and learned. Listen, let me tell you something.
Tell them, George.
Let me tell you something. If we end up number one, the USC end up number four, they got to come all the way back, all the way to Atlanta.
All the way out east.
I'm telling you. It might get nasty.
Thinking Riley should know. He should know. He got whooped up on before.
And we had to go out there.
Yeah,
you know,
man.
You know, we had to go out west to whoop up on Lincoln them. You know, we spotted them a few points. But then we had to spotted baking them a few points. Then we had to show them what was up. But yeah, I kind of hope, you know, Bama would be cool. You know what I mean? I hate it when Bama's iffy because their fans don't like to talk. You know what I mean? Like, even last year, they beat us. But before that game, it was no trash talk. The stadium wasn't full of Bama cats. It was kind of like, you know, kind of like how Florida is now. Like, they don't want to talk no trash. Mm-hmm. Nothing, you know, just quiet. And then they'll talk it afterwards, you know, if they win or whatever. You know what I mean? But USC, if USC makes it to number four, they're gonna be charged up. I see the talk online already all the time. Like, they really think they got a shot. And I'm here to tell you, Trojan fans, you do not have a shot.
The V going to be turned down. I'm going to let you know that. I mean, I don't want to see Bama. I don't even want them in it. I like it just the way it is. I want to see Georgia, Michigan, you know, TCU. I want to see them get a shot because it's a different team that nobody's seen in a long time, especially coming from the Big 12. You know, you had Oklahoma, you got Texas over there, you got those type of teams. But I'd love to see TCU get a shot and play Michigan, and I'd love to see USC in there too. I think it's nice when you got a mixture all around the country. I mean, you got out east, you got west, you got north, you got south, and with TCU, it'd be a nice little mixture of a college football playoffs.
It is. I looked at it the other day. I was like, it seemed like all the regions are represented.
Yeah, man, that'd
be
nice.
I mean? You got a West Coast team, you got an East Coast team in Georgia, you got a Midwest team, you know, middle of the, you know, the country team in TCU, and then who else we got? Michigan, and then you got Michigan with the Midwest. You know what I mean? The whole country is represented, and I think that's dope. When's the last time there's been a West Coast team in the Final Four? Has there?
Not in the college football playoffs.
Yeah, when did
the not since? Start? Oh man,
when did the playoffs start?
The last time it was.
I don't think there's been one.
No, there hasn't. Not in the college football playoff here. There hasn't been one. But speaking of which, there might be now, since now they're about to move the 12 teams. They're going from 4 to 12. The Rose Bowl opened the door for, you know, restructuring their contracts. And now we're going to go from 4 to 12 in 2024. So everybody enjoy it now, because I think after we win this natty, we going to win another natty next year. Then it's going to get interesting. It's going to get interesting. We're going to go for that three-peat, but it's going to get real interesting in 2024.
It's funny you talk about next year. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to get ahead of, you know, myself and ahead of us, but I was talking to some guys, you know, up at in Athens, you know, Saturday, that work around the team, support staff, this, that, and the other. And they feel like I feel like the team might be better next year.
Yeah, I feel the same. I feel if they have
they're so young. That's the thing. If quarterback position plays well next year, they have no choice but to be better. Because you got a lot of the ballers coming back.
Yeah, man.
You know what I mean? So, you know, it's not far-fetched. So they better not let us get it this year. Like, I don't know if there's ever been a three-peat, but, man, it could get crazy. Like I say, if quarterback plays good, you know what I mean, O-line, you know, stay doing what they do, man, it could be a three-peat, man. That's crazy.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have a special guest that's going to join the show. You know how we do. We never tell you ahead of time who's joining the show. We never give that to you because if for whatever reason they choose to not show up, if for whatever reason they just slip out of the, you know, the ethers and not join the show, then we're in trouble because we've already announced them. But I'm going to just let you guys know. We got an LSU alum, NFL alum for the Giants, NFL alum for the Redskins. He is a Super Bowl champion from the greatest sports franchise on the planet, the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's on ESPN. He's a co-host of the best podcast around. I have to say that it's better than ours, but it's the Pivot, no doubt about it.
It's great. I can't lie.
Yeah, it's the best. And not only that, he is my frat brother. He is Ryan Clark. RC, welcome to the 100 Sanford podcast. How are you doing, brother?
Oh, doing good, man. Just sitting in my wife's office. She lets me, you know, she lets me do my Zooms from here, man. So it's cool.
Man, thank you for blessing us with your presence. Truly, I have to give you your flowers like Freaky Freddy always says on the Pivot podcast. Got to give you your flowers, but you guys have the best podcast on the planet. I got to really say that for athletes, for entertainers, and I think you guys are really changing lives out there. I listen to it every time that the show comes out, and then I listen to multiple podcasts because I learn something every time from the actual show. Man. So I got to give you your flowers, even with butt naked, you know, chanting up here.
So you got to watch out for the Florida Gators. Are wild, man. You got to watch out for them, man.
Yeah, man. Hey, I don't know what chanting be on, boy.
You know what's crazy is like, you know, the podcast world is obviously extremely saturated now. You know, I think like podcasts are going to become the new social media, but I think it's good because it allows you to be able to express yourself in full. Whereas Twitter, you can't necessarily do that. Instagram, you can't do that. And so it's been cool to kind of go on a journey. And it seems like we've been doing it forever, man. But we're coming up on a year here in a month. You know, a month from now, it'll be a year we've been doing the show. And it's been a grind, but it's definitely been fruitful.
Yeah, man, we enjoy it, man. I enjoy it. I was listening to the Ryan Leaf episode earlier, or was it yesterday. I haven't finished it. You know what I'm saying? I know it's going to be great, as y'all always do. You know, you becoming, you know, the male equivalent, you know, the young Oprah over there, man. You do a good job. You do a good job. Like you reel everything in. You know, Fred's a little mild mannered. You know, Channing gets off the rails, and you know we got you coaching up. You're the Mike T of the podcast, man.
So you keep
everything together, man. We appreciate you joining us today, man. LSU Tigers, Georgia Bulldogs meeting for the second time in what, like 3 years. The last time was
wasn't good.
I hate y'all did that to me, man. Like I was telling Lamar earlier, man, I said, you know what, Pops, I'm gonna take you to the SEC championship, man. He was so excited, and that thing went downhill so fast. so when I say so fast, it went downhill fast. So I'm gonna take him again this time to see the same team. Hopefully we sitting in the same seats so he can get a different experience.
Man, you know what's so crazy is that, you know, so much of the SEC, especially the SEC West, has been Alabama. And people talk about Alabama so much, which they should. They've earned that. But today, LSU was releasing, you know, some of their SEC championship photos. And, you know, I forgot that, you know, Tyron's year, they played Georgia in the SEC, you know, championship. And that, you know, obviously then 2019. And so it's been crazy that those teams have met in the SEC championship that much.
And another one, too. They Tyron's year, they beat Georgia, and DJ Shockley's senior year, they beat LSU.
Okay.
So, like, we've played LSU a number of times in the SEC championship. Yeah. And, you know, I think people tend to forget, you know, Bama's been on that run, but LSU was kind of holding rank in that West, you know, for a minute, you know what I mean? So I don't think a lot of people expected them to be back in it this year. And that's a testament to Brian Kelly. So I'm going to lead that into, how do you feel about what Kelly's done? He's obviously a good coach. You know, I got to give him that.
Yeah.
You know, we gave him a lot of grief with his fake accents and all that. But when it boiled down to the nuts and bolts of the things, he seems like a pretty doggone good coach, man.
Well, I mean, I think the first thing is, and I took a lot of flack initially when he was hired. The first thing I said was that he was going to win. I think Brian Kelly is an excellent football coach. He won at Cincinnati. He won, I think it was Central Michigan before that, if I'm not mistaken. He won at Notre Dame. And the one thing I said was he was going to have more athletes on this team than he's probably had in his entire career of coaching. And the other part of it was, too, the last two coaches at LSU won national championship, the last three, actually, but one of them was Nick Saban, so he doesn't count. Les Miles was so bad in the environment at the university was so toxic that it got him fired from his new job. That's how bad
LSU, wow.
That's how bad the university, the football team atmosphere and the football team and the way it was run in the building, that's how bad it was. But he won a national championship. Coach O eventually got fired for just purely being incompetent. That's it. That's why he got fired. But he coached maybe one of the greatest, not maybe, he coached one of the greatest college teams of all time. And so I knew Brian Kelly would win. My only thing with Brian Kelly was, you know, we had kept doing the same thing. Les Miles was an old white dude from the Midwest. You know, Coach O was an old white dude from the Bayou. Then we went out and got an old white dude from the Northeast. And, you know, I'm the one they call when the boys have to march by themselves in 2020. Mm. And Coach O doesn't even want to go talk to him. Right? Like, I'm the one they call to fix that. They don't call nobody else for that. You know, I'm the one they call when somebody has to lead the entire athletic department through diversity training, right? And so, like, the way I see it, I saw it differently, and I didn't want somebody black. I just wanted somebody younger, somebody who I felt could relate to these boys. But as far as coaching football, man, I knew Brian Kelly would do an amazing job. I capped this team out at 9 wins. I said, if this team wins 9 games in the regular season, that's a great year. And that's where they got. And, you know, thankfully for them, one of those wins was Alabama. And now it puts you in the national championship against the best team in the country.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think about the culture now? I mean, you talked about how it was so toxic, you know, under Les Miles and how Coach O was incompetent. But what do you think with Brian Kelly coming in, even with the fake accent and all that, and a lot of people didn't think he would really jive so well with, you know, with the Baton Rouge culture. What do you think about the culture in that locker room around the community, around the university?
Yeah, I still don't think he jives with it. I think he's winning, though, which is what's important. He's a professional. I think the feeling in the office, the feeling around the building is one of professionalism. He's certainly an adult, and that's what LSU needed, obviously. It needed to be cleaned up in many ways, and I think he's on the way to doing that. Like, it's not the feel it used to be when I go back, you know what I mean? And, you know, obviously the people in the cafeteria are still the same people that worked there when I was there. They still, you know, they treat me the same. The equipment manager is still the same guy that took over at the Coach Boss passed, who was, you know, who worked there when I was in school as well. And so, like, those things are the same, but, you know, I get to pro day and I, you know, I got to the door and they asked me, who was I there with? And I was like, me, you know, and then somebody else asked me, you know, and I was still like, me. And eventually, you know, 'cause they were all new people, you know,
right.
Yeah. And I wasn't finna explain myself. Mm-hmm. Right. Either you're going to let me in or you're not. And it is what I had to work anyway. And so then finally somebody sees me and then, you know, he sends, like, his assistant runs out because I kind of tell the story jokingly to a couple of people on the field. But, you know, the assistant runs out because they know who I am. Right. They know my voice. They know what it means if I say I can't get in. But now everything's cool, man. He's done a great job. Those boys seem, you know, taken care of. Those boys seem happy. They're playing hard. Mm-hmm. And in the end, you know, G, like, my time is up. That's all I care about. I don't care if they ever win, to be honest. Like, I play it up for TV. I don't care. That junk, honestly, LSU loses, bro, my day is the same. LSU wins, my day is the same. I just want them to be okay, man, and be put in a place to be successful men as they leave.
As far as the LSU Nation, faithful Tiger Nation, I don't know what they call you guys. What's the feeling about, you know, going into this weekend? I don't hear a lot, you know what I mean? That fan base doesn't really get it popping with the Georgia fan base. Because, you know, they're in the West. They probably talk all the trash versus Bama and all this stuff. I don't hear much, but I want to know, how do they feel about their chances this weekend, with the vibes you're getting, or and just what do you think about, you know, are they gonna come? Are they gonna show up in Atlanta? You know what
I think they will. I think I mean, listen, none of us are confused as to who's the best team in the country. You know what I mean? I think when you look at what Georgia has done, and maybe Michigan, you know, Michigan, after beating Ohio State the way that they did, can maybe, you know, lay a claim to at least being in the conversation of, you know, one of the two. They're definitely one of the two best teams in the country, being the best team in the country. It's only those two teams in the conversation, and it's largely Georgia who people believe is the best. Think about losing all of the players. You not only lose to the draft last year, but you lose to the draft early last year, and how good that team still is. It's a testament to the recruitment of Kirby and the development of those players, man. I think, but like here, it's like, what do you got to lose? Right?
That's dangerous.
It's probably even worse for Georgia in this sense. Not that Georgia has to be scared, because they don't, right? And you play, G, when you lose a game, it's easier to convince me I'm not playing well enough and I got to change something.
Exactly. Right?
Like, you lose to Arkansas, but you don't play well. I mean, you beat Arkansas, but you don't play well. You're like, oh, I'll get it fixed. You know what I'm saying? I'll get it right. Then you play UAB. Oh, we'll get it fixed. We'll get it right. But then you go lose to A&M. And now the attention to detail that week, which should have been high anyway because of you playing, that heightens. You see what I'm saying? And that, so I
really thought about that. We think similarly, I guess, from the world of playing. I thought that them losing to Texas A&M, not that it makes their team any better, you know.
No.
But it makes you're hyper aware of everything that you did wrong. Yes. And on the flip side, I think Kirby having to get the team up every week, they've been so much better than everyone they've played.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were talking earlier about looking at the schedule in the preseason, I expected Georgia to go undefeated, just being completely honest with you. And it happened. You know what I mean? So, but I think that's a really great job, a coaching job, to get a team up every single week when you're better than everybody that you play. Like, their bad games were against the weaker teams. Like, they blew out all the good teams.
They showed up ready. They showed up ready. But, like, the other piece of it is, too, though, like, I think that would be up, honestly, because, you know, when you're playing an SEC team in this position, like, you understand what's at stake. I think also, too, now, though, LSU can play completely loose, because if they win this game, they aren't going to the college football playoffs is no longer on the line for them. Right. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to walk in tight. You just walk in and say, you know what? I'm going to come out here and play as hard as I can. I understand who we're playing against, but they got to see us too. And you know how it works in our conference as well, man. Like, even when teams look at Georgia, like, an SEC team ain't going to look at Georgia like, you know, it's they're superhuman or they're out of this world, because like, all of these kids been knowing each other since they were 14 on the 707 circuit or on the camp circuit, right? They've been competing against each other forever. Like, nah, I feel like I'm better than dude. And so I think LSU has to play well early, because what happens when you play a team as good as Georgia, if you let them jump out on you, the first thing that happens is, man, I knew they were so much better than us. right? Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, when you fight, when you take a good punch and you stay in there, you start saying, hold on, this ain't really what it looked like on film against Tennessee. You know what I mean? This ain't what it looked like on film against Florida. I'm in this. And so hopefully we could, you know, keep it close early, and then Jaden can make some plays late with that, with his athleticism, you know, against that vaunted defense.
You know, RC, before we go there, you had mentioned, you said Georgia was the best team in the country. And from a, I guess as a Georgia fan, we look at it like, man, people are always knocking Georgia. They want to put somebody, they always want to vault Georgia with somebody else, an Ohio State, a Michigan, Alabama, whoever it may be. What are your thoughts on Kirby Smart in this program, this Georgia program that's now going, you know, 8-0 for the second straight year in the SEC, getting ready on the edge of a possible another national championship? What are your thoughts on him in this program?
The only dumb thing he ever did was let Justin Fields go to another school.
Hey, I hear you.
other than that, what Kirby's done is absolutely phenomenal. Kirby has recruited in the way that we've seen the Alabama recruiting be for years and years. I feel like there are even some players that would have added depth to Alabama, have been starters at Alabama that chose to go to Georgia instead of going to Alabama. I think when you're directly recruiting against them, you can't beat them if you don't recruit that way. And I think Kirby has been able to do that. I think what Kirby has done has knocked some of the luster off of the only way to go win the SEC is to go to that school. Right. Mm-hmm. It started to be, you know, that's what it was. It was like, yeah, you can, you know, Nick was able to say that. Like, you want to win the SEC championship, come here. Right. Kirby could say that now. Yeah, you might be able to win it there, but I know in your 3 years or 4 years here, you're going to win one. And Kirby could say that. He could say, I know in your 3 years here or 4 years here, you're going to play in one. Right. And that's what Nick always had over every team, because in the West, you can tell a kid, you come in for 3 years, you'll play in the SEC championship. You'll get to the college football playoff. And I think that's what Kirby has been able to create. And he's been able to create that. And it's now, it's an energy. It's a mood. It's the way that Georgia moves, in the sense of like, hey, we know that every year we could compete for a national championship. And every team that walks into training camp can't say that. But I do think, and, you know, y'all will understand this, I do think a lot of times people like to leapfrog Georgia or feel certain ways about Georgia because Georgia never has that quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Georgia's a lot like Alabama used to be, mm-hmm. where you walk into a game and you say, you know what? Of the 22 starters, 21 of them for Georgia are better than the other 21 on the other side. The one place we're like, is quarterback, right? You know, when they'd walk out, not that A.J. McCarron was bad, but when their quarterback was A.J. Right. McCarron, or when their quarterback was Greg McElroy, right? Like, you knew Alabama was still going to be great, but you was like, that position, we cool. I think, and this is no knock on Stetson Bennett, you know. I believe, you know, he got to high school right after I left. But, you know.
Get off of boy. I know he got a 401k, but really.
You know, but you know what I'm saying? Like, when you look at that, when you think Bryce Young at Alabama, you think C.J. Stroud and all these players, you don't see Stetson Bennett that way. And I think for that reason, that's why this team wasn't ranked one at the beginning of the season. And then even as they were moving, you know, Hendon Hooker from Tennessee. Like, when Tennessee was playing well, they wanted to put those guys over you. Why? Because the way it looked at that position, it was like they are dynamic at the one position you need to be dynamic at, even though we all knew Georgia was better everywhere else.
Right.
Yeah,
and I'm glad you went into that, because I was going to ask you that, because it never seemed like anyone was ready to hold Georgia at the very top until maybe like now, and until like now when it's undeniable, like you have to. So, I'm glad you covered that, because I was wondering how it felt in the media space where you at, because from the fan perspective on the outside, it looks like nobody gives respect to the undefeated team, the team that lost one game in the last two calendar years.
And y'all ain't like, fun to watch, man.
It's fun to me.
RC, that's what I've been saying. It's fun to me. That's exactly what I've been saying.
Lamar did say that.
It's there's no sexy factor. That's what I've been saying.
Ugly. Oh, y'all uniforms ugly.
But ugly sex is good, RC. Ugly sex is good. That was for chance.
Most times they just work harder. That don't mean it's good. when you're ugly, you know you got to put a lot of effort in.
You don't like to see Brock Bowers on a tight end sweep going to the crib, man? Now,
like, that's the sexiest part of your team. That is not. I think he's phenomenal. You know what I mean? I think he's phenomenal. But like, even in a piece of that, it's like, think about it. The player offensively that you're the most scared of, and this is in no way to be disrespectful, is a white tight end.
Hey, ain't that the player you most scared of when you play the Chiefs?
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you most certainly are. But he hang around us.
That's true. this is the football. Brock Bowers hang around us too.
You know what I mean? So like that's the. But I do think like I was talking about him. I do a radio spot every Thursday here on LSU football, and I was just saying like I believe that Bowers would be the first tight end taken this year, right?
I was talking to him. Yeah, I was talking to some. He was a freshman last year, 18, 19 years old. And I would talk to, you know, I come from the scouting world after I retired. Talking to some of my scout friends, and I was like, am I tripping thinking he would be a first-round pick last year as a freshman? They say, no, he would have been.
Yeah, like, he's that special, man. I think like, even that player being your most explosive offensive player is, you know, like Lamar said, is just not sexy. And so I think the defensive dominance is almost boring, you know. It's right. Almost like, and you know, like you guys can't even have any fun games. You know what I mean? Like they're like close, and when they're close, Kirby goes to the sideline. All right, y'all, we played with them long enough. Let's go and put our foot on the gas now and go on win this game. You know, and so I think that's been a large part of it that. You haven't had the Alabama, Texas, where Bryce Young ducks under the defensive end on the blitz, gets the first down to win. You know, you haven't had the LSU win by 2-point conversion against Alabama because you are so good. People are cutting that game off the middle of the third quarter. And, you know, I think, but people are getting an opportunity to see it once the college football playoff starts, just how talented, just how good and deep, you know, that defense is, and also that team as a whole. And y'all do have a quarterback that's one of the top players in the country, no matter how you cut it.
RC, real quick, because you played defensive back, and obviously you played for Mike T, you played for those Steelers, and you played around one of the greatest safeties that ever played the game. Actually, I think the greatest safety to ever play the game, which is Troy Polamalu. We got a guy named Keely Ringo. Have you managed to see Keely and his ability to be able to cover? Because he's been a guy that's been, I guess – rated pretty high. I guess a lot of people have gone at him from different teams. And I want to see what Jaden Daniels does this week. What are your thoughts on Keely Ringo, who was Mr. Chip 6 for us?
One, Keely's freaking fast as hell.
That's huge. The
first thing. I met Keely his junior high school, actually, at the Adidas 5-star camp. My son was there. He won, like, the fastest man. Then he won the fastest man again next year. He gets the pick 6 in last year's championship. I think he has some limitations, you know. You don't put Keely in the conversations of past years. You don't put Keely in the Sauce Gardner conversation. You know, you go back to Jalen Ramsey, you don't put him in that conversation. I think he's a step below those guys. Strong, he's physical at the line of scrimmage. I mean, he could just flat out fly. I mean, just ridiculous top-end speed. I think he has some difficulties in and out of cuts, but he also plays on a team that doesn't make him have to cover those routes, right? You don't have to cover a ton of intermediate routes ain't going to come open because your quarterback not going to be standing up. Right. And also, right, yeah. And also the game is so different in college and it happens so fast. And it's the route combos aren't intricate. And so you're asking him to do a lot of times what he can do, which is cover the go ball. Right. And, you know, I think he's a really good player. I think he's going to be a first round draft pick. And I think he'll be fine. You know, it'll probably be a Malik Nabers matchup for him because we play Kayshawn Boutte so much in the slot. Dre Jenkins on the outside as well, Brian Johnson. And he matches up so favorably with all of those guys because none of those guys are the quicker than a hiccup getting in and out of cuts type guys. They like to be physical players as well, which is where I think Keeley excels.
There's a lot of BB development happening at the next level. Because can you see a guy like, since Lamar brought up Keeley, actually being better at the next level? Because I think that actually happened. Keeley reminds me of Tyson Campbell. And that he could run big, physical, could not play the ball at Georgia. And then when he's having a great year down there in Jacksonville, he's been able to play the ball and, you know, make some plays. How do you feel that guys develop at the next level? Because to me, like a quarterback, I feel like a guy is what he is in college. Mm-hmm. You get, mm-hmm. Is it like that in DB?
No, I think you can definitely develop. I think skill development is an ongoing evolution, right? See, like Tyson couldn't play the ball, but Tyson was so fluid, mm-hmm. right? Tyson could also run, right? He could also yep. run. And you have to remember, coming out of high school, Tyson and P2, Pat Surtain the second, were in the same high school
team. Same team.
Right? Both coached by Big Pat. So these guys are getting what is now league coaching at the high school level. And I thought Tyson was a really good player. I mean, I just think people at Georgia can't catch. Because you know who else can't catch? Eric Stokes.
That's true.
Right? I trained E. Which was his pro day at the time. And I was like, bro, you can't catch a cold. You know what I mean? But you can flat out fly. And so, yeah, I think you can get that sort of development. And, you know, like we're just to the point now, man, to where we nitpick at these kids so much, right? Because this kid is going to be a first-round pick. And it's like, yeah, but do you think? Like, man, these dudes are just so talented. Man, and I think like some skill is natural. Some skill you can learn. Derek Stingley Jr., who went to LSU, the most natural ball skills I ever saw from a young human.
Wow.
I coached him on my 7-on-7 team. We only put him on offense to throw him the ball, and he caught every one of them. Like I'm being like legitimately honest. Like if we put him in the game. He was getting the ball, and he was number one player in the country at the time, so everybody knew it, and he only had one route. We only threw fades. Like, we didn't throw any other balls to him, you know? And so, like, I think playing the ball is a natural skill, but a skill you can get better at as well.
All right. Who else? You go, Graham.
I'm sorry. I was just curious. Do you think Ringo
– I didn't even know you was on here, man. What's up, buddy?
I'm sorry. I'm
Graham. Graham just slipped in. This is Graham Cobb.
But yeah, I was curious, like with Ringo at the next level, do you feel like he's going to be a true boundary corner, or do you feel like he's a guy that we'll see kind of play more in zone coverage and maybe more as a safety?
I'm always like, what's so funny, man, is like, people treat safety like the side chick sometimes, you know?
I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
You know what I'm saying?
It's like they do guard on offensive line.
Yeah. Like, yeah, he's a good left tackle, but he'll be a Hall of Fame guard. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what's funny for me, man? And I was blessed. I was truly blessed in my career. The two most special athletes on the last two teams I played on played safety. You know what I mean? Like, when I was in Washington, I played with Sean Taylor. There was nobody on that team that was a better athlete than Sean Taylor. Like, Sean Taylor – yeah, like Sean Taylor wasn't playing safety because he couldn't play anything else. He could play everything else. He was playing safety because he wanted to. You know what I mean? Right. Like, Troy the same way. Like, if we were like, hey, Troy, we need you to go play corner for a game, he'd have been one of the best corners in the nation, I mean, in the NFL. The problem was he might have blitzed, though, when he's supposed to be in cover three.
That's true.
You know? And so, like, I don't think it just transitions that way, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you need to have a natural skill to play the position. And sometimes, even though you may not be that top-level corner, you might even be a worse safety.
That's true.
Right?
I don't think people get that. Like, yeah, you just can't toss a guy in at guard. I try to tell people that all the time. It don't work like that. They're two mechanically different positions, and it don't translate all the time. Or if you wanted to translate it, it will take some time. You know, it don't even translate from left to right tackle. You know what I mean? It takes some time to be ready. So I guess you answered that. And then the only other question I had was, who else? I know you're on the pro side of things right now, but if you've looked at any Georgia ball, who else do you like on that squad, man?
Man, you know what? I've only seen, three or four games this year, and y'all just beat the brakes off of everybody. So I don't really – I can be honest and say, like, I don't even really pay much –
That's cool. That's
much,
cool.
Man. Much attention to it. Yeah, I'm like, this is boring. You know what I mean? Like, for real. I'm sitting around watching Florida, and I was like, yuck. You know, I'm turning this off. You know, y'all. You know, we had I can't even remember what number this kid was, man. Maybe 22. I can't remember, but he ran inside out. Robinson gets out of the pocket, man. He ran inside out from the middle of the field, and it was actually the play where Robinson got hurt. When he knocked him out of bounds, but he ran from the middle of the field.
Richardson? Talking about quarterback?
Richardson. I'm sorry, Richardson. And he was running so fast. And he had such bad intentions, you know what I mean? And then when he got there, like, AR-15 is running out of bounds, and he did not care. You know what I'm saying? He's like, I ran all this way. I'm going to hit him. and it was one of those things. I think that's the same game. I think it was Bowers catches the tip on the wheel route or the 2-3 zone, you know, down the sideline early in the half. It's another massive tight end. I think 84 maybe his number, you know, or big tight end. Zero. He catches the football.
Yeah.
Zero. Yeah, he catches the ball. And I was like, man, you know what? They're cheating. And, you know, they're rotating different running backs in. I was like, man, this is boring. I'm not watching this no more. But I think right now, you know, when you look at what Georgia is, when I watch them, especially watching them defensively, you know, Smith and, you know, some of the other players on the back end too, I thought to myself, like, that's what Alabama used to look like. You know, I can't remember what year, what championship it was versus Clemson or something like that. It was like 11 guys on the field at one time that got a shot in the league, you know. Georgia is now playing at that level. Like, even when you cut the TV on and I watch Quay Walker, you know, play at Green Bay, who has some things to learn. But, man, like, you just watch what he does naturally, just running, setting blocks, hitting. He's the green dot, calling the plays. And you like, man, that team lost that guy and then lost N'Kobe, who was probably more – influential on that team than he was, and that's the guy that was first round, and then he just reloaded, man, and they're right back where they were the year before, man. It's truly impressive.
Well, RC, I mean, we talked about Georgia, and you talked about Brian Kelly a little bit earlier, but what is LSU in your opinion? I mean, you've watched them probably more than any other team in the nation. What can they do this weekend up in the Mercedes Dome against Georgia? What do you like about them?
I think they fight. That's first off. I think it's a team. I think they play extremely hard. Maybe take away the Texas A&M game. They've been a team that's adjusted really well at halftime. You know, adjusted to what the team was giving them in the first half offensively. and they've been, you know, normally a great second half team. They gave up just some beautiful catches from the slot on Sage Ryan, a couple of plays against A&M, but overall they've been good. There's one player on the defense that, you know, there may be some others on that defense that are start at Georgia. There's one player on that defense that would be a star at Georgia, and his name is Harold Perkins Jr. Yeah, he's an 18-year-old freshman. He is, if Von Miller and Micah Parsons got thrown into that little machine that they made the lady Kelly, that made Kelly LeBrock on Weird Science, Harold Perkins Jr. would come out. I think he has to affect the game. Like, he has to be a guy that affects this game for them defensively. Jaden Daniels has to play the way we saw him play against Alabama, has to play the way we saw him play against Florida, Ole Miss during that run, has to stay poised. And it's funny, like, that's a kid, I love Jaden. And I don't love him because he plays for LSU. He actually committed to Arizona State the same year my son did, you know, so they're really close friends. Mm-hmm. And he totally made me wrong about Justin Herbert. Going into the draft, they asked me about Justin Herbert. I was like, man, that kid can't play. I was like, he's just big and pretty. He can throw a pretty ball. He can run, but he can't play. Mm-hmm. And the reason was Jaden's freshman year, they play Oregon. Oregon's ranked in the top 10. He goes toe-to-toe with Justin Herbert, and he was a better player. He was a more poised player. He was a better passer, a better rusher. And so I know that the moment won't be too big for him. Georgia just may have, like, too many great players, even for a great game from him, to overcome it.
Gotcha. Switching speeds a little bit, man. What do you think about the NFL this year, man? Is there a clear top dog, man? It's hard to, from week to week, it's hard to tell, man.
There's no really great team, I don't think. You know, there's no team that you look at right now and you'd be surprised if they lost in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think Kansas City is obviously going to be the team you look at that you think has the toughest time losing, because of the guy that plays quarterback.
Right.
Right, you look at what Patrick Mahomes could do, and you're like, sheesh, like, I don't know who beats them in crunch time with this kid, this guy. But you got to remember the second half of the AFC Championship last year and what the Cincinnati Bengals were able to do. And then it's like, you watch the Philadelphia Eagles play early on in the year, and they're blowing teams out. They seem invincible. And now it seems like if you put me and George out there, we can run the football on them. Right. But it hurts. It hurts when, you know, when your guy, Jordan's not out there. You know what I'm saying? When Jordan Davis isn't out there, it hurts this team. You know, he is that freaking good. You know, and now even with Linval Joseph and Ndamukong Suh being implemented into that team, or them acquiring those guys, is still not the same from what he was able to do. And so you look at that team having to play San Francisco, what D'Amico Ryans is doing as a defense coordinator, should be a head coach next year.
Yes, sir. Like, smoking it.
Yeah, bro, they ain't been scored on in the second half in four games.
That's crazy.
Bro, like, a team accidentally scores three.
And I'm rooting, you know, for them. My guy ran Carthon out there, so I'm rooting for them.
So I don't know, man. It's no great team. It's a lot of teams you can see getting a chance to win it, which makes it exciting. Makes it exciting. It's going to be – this is a big week, though. Tonight, you know, obviously, you know, this week we've got Buffalo, New England. I think it's a big week to see that. Miami, San Francisco. Oh my gosh!
Ooh,
you know, I think that's going to be nice. That's going to tell us a lot about those two teams. I'm looking really forward to seeing that, because I think that clears up some of the picture for us, you know, as the weeks go on.
You know, RC, I got to pivot real quick.
I like that.
Yeah. I knew you would. I'm gonna help you out, Fred. But you talk about. You were talking to Ryan Leaf on your last show, right? And you were talking, Ryan was talking about being a professional, showing up, working hard. Do you think that the NFL is changing because of all the money that now these guys are going to be coming from with the NIL, with the portal? Guys may not be working as hard as they used to be. They're just, you know, transferring in and out of schools or whatever it may be. Has the NFL changed, or is it just an actual player? Because it, to me, it just seems like the talent level, and there's no dominant teams anymore. Like there was a Pittsburgh Steelers that were dominant, or a Green Bay Packers team that was dominant, or, you know, a New England Patriots that cheated, you know, all those Super Bowls. But go ahead.
You know, it's crazy though, bro. Like as we, as you speak of like our dominance, like we were never better than 12-4.
Yeah, but you were dominant. See, my background is I'm from Pittsburgh, and I'm a Steeler fan.
You're just a homer.
I am a homer. I've seen every game that RC played in, every single game in Pittsburgh I've seen. But they were dominant. Then the mentality, the standard is the standard. But I don't see that now across the league.
Well, I think the league has changed, though, as well, right? The reason that team and those teams seem so dominant is because we were defensively dominant. Right, we were physically dominant, and they've legislated that out of the NFL. And so now, in truth, the only way to feel or seem dominant is to be able to score a lot of points.
Right.
And to have a quarterback that scores those points in a way to where it's like, ooh, that's cute. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. that they sexy. You know, and so I think that's like the hardest part. You know, if you go back to last year and you look at when, you know, the Rams went in the Super Bowl, the Rams weren't a dominant team. And then they played Cincinnati. They weren't a dominant team either. I do think that there's more parity. There's more parity in the league now. And, like, you never can guess it. You know, like, I got crushed in the offseason when Russell Wilson went to Denver, you know, get up, ask me, do I think, like, this makes them a championship team? And I was like, no, it don't. You know, and they're like, well, why? I was like, you act like he's an all-time great. I was like, Russell Wilson is very good. I was like, but he's not an all-time great. Like, he's not going to do to that team what Peyton Manning did to that team years ago. You know, and, you know, I had people texting me, but Russell Wilson's this. I don't care. What you talking about? Wait. Wait on it. You know, and I'm be honest now, G, I didn't think he's going to be this bad.
Right. Me either. I don't think I thought it made them at least competitive, you know, in the AFC West.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it made that conference interesting, and when in reality it's still the Chiefs and everybody else.
Yeah, you know, and what's crazier about it, and I was right about this. I said for years in the NFC West, when Russell Wilson was the quarterback, you felt like once he became Russ, that the Seattle Seahawks had an advantage at the quarterback position. Mm-hmm. I was like, there will literally be no week Russell Wilson's in Denver and he's playing a division game. And this includes Derek Carr to me, where the Denver Broncos have a clear edge at quarterback. And I was like, and when you play the Chargers and the Chiefs, they have a better quarterback.
Definitely.
Facts.
You know, yep. And I said, that's going to be the problem. I was like, they're not going to have the best quarterback on the field. And, like, I've been right. So this year's interesting, man. I think Cincinnati's good. Philly's good. San Francisco, Dallas is good, which is always great for the league. But on the other side, bro, Cincy, Buffalo, Miami, Kansas City. Like, if any of those four teams went to the Super Bowl, you wouldn't be shocked, you know? If Baltimore fixed some of their stupidity, I wouldn't be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they made it. Like if Lamar starts going crazy, like, so I wouldn't put no money on nothing.
You definitely can't, because I see that in fantasy football. You can't depend on anybody. Like, I'm getting washed. Like there, you know, back in the day, you know, if you played a little fantasy, there'll be some guys you can count on to ball out every week. This now in the league, like, it could be an unknown. It could be, you know, it could be a star. Nobody's consistently great from week to week. And I think it's cool, actually. You know, I like the parity.
Well, RC, you're one of the busiest guys in, you know, football, media, and everything else. So we got to cut. I just got two more questions for you, and I'm going to let you get up out of here. This came from one of our guys, Jim Wood, who was with us with Dog Central. You know, now they're about to go to 12 games in the college football playoffs, which could 12 teams, which could end up being like 16, 17 games for a student athlete. Is that too many games for a guy to play?
Yep, absolutely. It's absolutely too many games. But you know what happened? They started paying him.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You know, they started paying him because now we're not going to be able to go talk about their, because it is still amateurism, right? We're not going to be able to go sell that story, right? When the parents go argue, but when Bryce Young's parents and CJ Stroud's parents go say, but why is our son playing this many games? Well, he's also made $2 million.
Right.
Right. He drives a G-Wagon, you know, or Bijan Robinson. You drive a Lamborghini, right? You know, like, and so I think that's going to be the issue. But I absolutely believe it's too many games. And the other problem is, right, like those teams, those 12 teams probably have a good amount of NFL players on.
Exactly.
And mm-hmm. and if I'm the 12th seed, right, who would be 12 right now? Do y'all know? It'd be 12, 10. I don't even know who those teams
are. They've given
it,
some.
It would be Washington right now.
Mm. Right. So guess what, guys? Guess who's not winning the championship in that 12-team scenario?
Washington.
Mm-hmm. Right? And so if I'm a first or a second, if I'm going to get drafted at all, you know what I'd say? Hey, man, I love y'all. Y'all be good. If I'm the parent of a kid, I would tell them that.
Let me ask you this, though. Don't you think – you know how athletes feel. Even at the 12th seed, put it like this. Have you ever went into a game – you went to LSU, then you went to the Steelers. Well, you didn't go straight to the Steelers.
But, right, I got you, yeah.
But you feel like you got a shot. Don't you always feel like you got a shot? I know I never used to go into any games thinking, you know what, we're going to lose this game. I've been fortunate to be on some, you know what? I don't think we can win this game. I've never felt like that. You know what I mean? So you don't think guys would play, you know, as the 12th seed and thinking that, you know what? We might have a shot.
You know, you're right. Let me tell you how I know you're right.
That's six games. It's not 12.
You're right. This is how I know you're right, bro. My son plays off Arizona State, obviously. Coach Hearn gets fired. They play one game, and they played better, right? And then they go to USC. USC is undefeated at the time. They give up a ton of points, but they play well offensively. He plays well in the second half. And, like, I'm excited, right? Because I pulled up to USC, and I knew they were not going to win. Like, I knew it. I was like, man, this is great. Like, this is progress. Like, we lost to Eastern Michigan 2 weeks ago, and we just came in here and fought against USC. And them boys played hard, and, you know, and my son comes out, and he's boo-hooing. I mean, like, really crying, right? And he's hugging his mama crying. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, wait, did he not know what we knew? You know what I'm saying? So to your point, you are correct. But on the other side of that, if I'm a father, I sit down and has some knowledge. I sit down with my son. He's going to have an opportunity to go to the league and say, okay, we could take this like one bowl game, right? Because we might be out week one. Mm-hmm. We could take it like one bowl game and delay you getting together and hope you – and if you lose, then you're free and you can go play. But how long is this 12-game playoff going to last? Are you going to let these kids play until February? And so does now late January, which they kind of already played to the middle. Like. So right. Mm-hmm. So now does the combine move back?
Yeah, it's interesting. I haven't thought about all this.
Yeah, you know, do kids say, you know what? I'm not going to go to the combine now. I'm just going to do my pro day. The NFL doesn't want that because the NFL makes money off of the combine.
Mm. Combine's a TV event now.
Combine's a TV event. Imagine the combine now without Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, Kelly Ringo, right? All these people because they had to play until the Super Bowl or until the end of January. And so – like it's one of those things we're trying to please everybody, because you haven't been able to please everybody. We also have to know the 13th team gonna be pissed off too. right?
Yeah.
Like just the like same 15. Way the 15 be pissed off, 13 team gonna be mad too. It ain't gonna fix that.
Right.
Well, RC, the last question. We never let a guest come on here and not do what we're about to do. We got to put you on the spot. George hates when I do it, but I still got to do it because I know you're a man of integrity. You are a member of Kappa Alpha Psi. So, LSU plays Georgia this weekend. Mercedes.
LSU, you got to finish.
What is your score prediction, bro?
Don't be LSU. Like Joe Hamilton. Joe Hamilton he wouldn't give us. He just said Georgia Tech would score 17 points.
LSU wins
27-23. Okay, I'm gonna accept it.
They gonna score 27. Ooh.
They scored 27, man.
I think you're full of it, but
Georgia fan base is going to be melting down for the next 3 weeks before this playoff game.
Here's the thing, guys.
27 is a lot, RSC. They don't give up.
I don't need love in Georgia. What I need love in Georgia for?
We don't need the love. We need you to be a smart young man right now.
No.
27. I would have been. It would have been better if you said LSU is going to win 13-6.
I don't think LSU is going to hold them to 6 points. It's possible they could score a 27.
But we definitely know. No. That ain't happening.
Yeah. Possible.
We're going to see.
Bro, I don't care now if we lose. If we score 24, I'm coming back over here. Because y'all talking like LT finna walk out there. Michael like Parsons going to be on the other side. Aaron Donald at D tackle.
We're going to put that boring football on y'all. It just keeps squeezing. And everybody going to turn off their TVs.
George, like I said earlier, it's going to be ugly sex. That's what it's going to be.
It's why do y'all invite people on y'all show for this?
We don't let you live for about a good hour.
Is that why you invite people on your show?
We kept it nice, and we appreciate you.
I stopped watching Wednesday on Netflix for this.
We appreciate you, man.
All right, RC, we appreciate you coming on the show, man. We definitely do. And again, give your best to all the boys back at the pivot.
And slap Dan up for me, man. I play with Orlovsky, man. Slap him up for me when you get back to the studio.
Bro, Dan's so dang funny, man. He's a weirdo.
Dan is the same Dan that he was in the locker room.
He eat that dry chicken all the time. Dan, where my nerve?
Dan from the Eastern Seaboard, man. He ain't got no flavor.
None, dog. Yo, boys be good, bro.
All right, dog.
All right, dog.
All right, fellas. That was Ryan Clark. He had some very interesting takes, man. Very interesting takes on Kirby, the program, the national scope of football right now. And I thought that was a pretty interesting answer that he gave, even to the college football playoffs, you know, moving from 4-12 in 2024. And George, we touched on that a little bit earlier.
I definitely want the 12 team playoff, but I didn't think about the implications of the guys playing that many more games. And I also didn't think about how it coincided with the offseason in pro football in the NFL. So I didn't think about it that it's going to be tight. Put it like that. It's going to be very tight unless they move some things around. And I believe they'll figure it out. It's possible. Mm-hmm. They probably have to push the NFL season some. It's only two preseason games. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how they manage it.
I want to give you a stat that's going to blow your mind because you played with this guy. So David Green, when he finished his career at Georgia, had the most wins by a quarterback in NCAA history with
4 wins. Oh, I knew that. Yeah, I knew that.
4 years. No, this is
what's going to blow your mind. Peyton's right second.
Yeah, well, there's been a bunch of people that have passed him now because they, you know, there's more games. Yeah, but these kids, could play 41 games in 3 years if they if they played a conference championship game in a first round playoff, you know, which is unlikely to happen. But if you were on a team that happened to lose your conference championship game 3 years in a row and be a 5-12 seed in the playoff, then you would, you know, if you won, you could play 17 games 3 years in a row.
But if you look at it theoretically, that's the scope of somebody leaving after their junior year if they start as a freshman. David Green started, you know, when
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. But I mean, like, now 4 years is basically 3 years worth of games, or 3 seasons is 4 years worth of games now.
Right.
I mean, so, interesting. You know, even if you have a 15 game season, which is what you have now, I mean, that's still 45 games.
Yeah.
Man. I mean, like, these kids for Georgia, Jalen Carter, you know, he was hurt. But, like, Ringo, for example, he's going to have played, more than likely, he's going to have played 30 games in the last 2 years. That's a lot, especially when you start talking about running backs and mileage on running backs and, you know, some of the stuff that guys' bodies go through, man. I mean, you know better than any of us the
pains
of playing football.
Well, if you look at it, too, I think something that Georgia is poised to handle is utilizing three backs. A lot of schools are now moving to, you know, a platoon of backs where it used to be one bell cow in the backfield. He was going to carry the ball 25 times, 30 times, you know, for his junior and senior year. But now, you know, guys, that's going to be an advantage for teams that can recruit that way. I mean, now you could say to a kid, hey, we're using 3-4 backs because we have to use 3-4 backs. Everybody's going to get their touches. Everybody's going to get their looks, their numbers, because numbers are going to increase, right? It's going to be elevated numbers in terms of if you play 16 games, 15 games, whatever it may be. So there's a lot of different ways you can look at it. You can spin it if you're a good recruiter like Kirby and the boys are down there in Athens. So
it's going to be interesting. Man, I mean, hopefully there's some –
A 1,000-yard receiver is 58 yards a game in a 17-game season.
Yeah, man. Well, let's revert real quick, fellas. I know we had RC on, LSU alum, talking about a little bit about the LSU Tigers. We do play LSU this weekend, SEC championship game, as we alluded to earlier. Graham, you came in a little bit later, handling some business, but what are your thoughts on LSU? I mean, coming off that loss, 38-23 to A&M, you know, they've had some other losses that didn't look so good as well. Florida State early on, Tennessee, you know, they got – kind of putting a stranglehold there.
This LSU offense is really interesting because it's like against – there's a freeze point against certain defenses, against good defenses. They hit this spot where they can't really move the ball. And they've been very boom or bust. Like, you know, they struggled to move the ball on Florida State, and then they finally went on that late drive. But they scored 23 points in that game. And then against Mississippi State, they had 31. But, I mean, through three quarters in that game, they scored 21 points in the fourth quarter of that game. So they scored 10 points for the first three quarters against Mississippi State, who has a good defense, as we saw. But, I mean, Auburn held them to 21 points. And Jaden Daniels was 8 of 20 passing for 80 yards. Not very good. Like, Auburn's defense is not – terrible elite. But they're not great, right?
Right.
They scored 13 against LSU, which was kind of a weird game for them. But then they play Florida, boom, 45 points. They play Ole Miss, boom, 45 points. Alabama, they score 32. 8 of those are in overtime. But, like, my point being, you know, the next week they go play Arkansas and they score 13. Like, they – I think they've improved as a team. I think Brian Kelly's done a really good job of, like, keeping that locker room together, and not just keeping them together, but getting them to rally and play some good football this year. But with Daniels, man, like, you know, if you're able to contain him a little bit and keep him from hurting you with his legs, it's not that he can't beat you with his arm, because he's got a good arm, but like, it's what Georgia does to everybody, right? Where it's like, if you miss that 4-yard curl route on second and six,
you're in a world of trouble.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So it's just, you know, I think this is a – LSU's receivers are probably the one position room that would scare me a little bit, just because they are big-bodied dudes who, you know, I think they won't be as easily controlled at the line of scrimmage by Lassiter and Ringo as a lot of receivers that they've played this year. I think they'll still do a good job and they'll still – get up on them and play a lot of press, but those guys are big bodied. And, you know, I think if I'm LSU, I kind of want Jaden Daniels to let it rip and throw those deep balls and hope my guys win more 50-50s because, you know, I mean, we know the center of this defense, what it looks like with Bullard and Starks and Chris Smith. Like, and these linebackers cover really well too. Like, you're not usually going to eat in the middle of the field against Georgia. And I think that's probably their best chance for success. And if they run the ball on Georgia, they'll be the first team that's really run the ball on Georgia with any consistency all year. And their offensive line has not been as shaky as it was to start the season, but it's not an offensive line that I look at, you know, across the front five and think these guys are going to come and get a push on this Georgia defensive line with consistency.
There it is.
I mean, yeah, I saw the exact same thing on film. And what's interesting about this team is that they truly go as Jaden goes. I mean, RC didn't lie about, you know, he's the guy. How he plays is how LSU plays. I mean, he leads the team in rushing. Obviously, he leads the team in passing. But one thing they can be had at, you can get to him. 40 sacks. He's been sacked 40 times, fellas. And if you can actually.
It's a lot for a mobile quarterback.
It's a lot. It's a lot. And at first, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, okay, maybe it's because he's running too much out of the pocket. But no, there's some teams that actually got to him. And it's really truly because of their young offensive line. Like you said, Graham, they have gotten better throughout the season. But also, as you mentioned, when they played teams that had better defenses, that offensive line actually struggled as well. The running game wasn't as poised, it wasn't as strong. They have a platoon of running backs that they use. You know, Williams, Kane, Emery Jr. is playing a little bit better. But it's all boom or bust plays, too. If you go back and you look at it, they have a lot of explosive plays. You know, 40-yard touchdown runs, big-time, long-time, you know, long passes downfield. They will play as well as Jaden Daniels plays. And I think if, you know, we put the actual pause on him, I think, you know, it's not going to be what most people would – I guess in LSU and Baton Rouge and what even RC believes, 27 points, I think it'll be something well below that.
Yep.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll give you an interesting stat on Daniels that I just pulled up here. He has been pressured a lot by defensive lines. His offensive line hasn't been great, but to your point, Lamar, he has had 113 pressures this year that were graded as allowed by him. Basically, like plays where he danced around and, you know, didn't get rid of the ball, which usually means his guys aren't open downfield, of course. But point being, like, if, you know, he's coming off this injury with the ankle and he's limited in terms of his mobility, that gets even scarier because, you know, not all those pressures obviously resulted in sacks for him. You know, to his credit, only 10 of those 113 resulted in him getting sacked. But still, that's just – it's a lot of havoc. And, you know, Jalen Carter is almost as fast as a lot of these quarterbacks, if not as fast, you know.
No doubt about it. That defensive line is coming to eat. I think they will eat well.
Breakout game for Mykel Williams.
Ooh, you calling your shot already? Okay. All right.
I think he's going to do great. I mean, it's coming. He's been getting back there.
Yeah,
he's been getting back there. You know, guys just they for some reason they like to let the ball go against Georgia, and I'm not mad at it because it sometimes it ends up in our hands. But he's gonna get back there.
Absolutely.
Well, then, fellas, let's get into this. We got to give our predictions for the night. RC, he went 27-23. LSU, which I expected him to. I mean, why wouldn't he? Everybody else kind of chooses their own team. But what are your thoughts on this game? Final score prediction. You already gave your shot, Graham, in terms of who might have a breakout game, Mykel Williams. But what's your thoughts on this game?
I think Georgia's going to, you know, when we were texting in our little group chat earlier today, George kind of pointed out some parallels between this game and the 2002 Arkansas game that he played in. And I feel like that there are a lot, you know, and I think, LSU, you know, I expect them to show up and play hard. No, they don't have a playoff berth on the line because of their loss last week, but this would be a big cherry on top of their season. But I just, look up and down at the games they've played in, and you know, some of the they've been a very inconsistent team, and Georgia is consistent at making teams inconsistent, right? Like, they are very good at taking teams out of what they do well, and I expect they'll do the same on Saturday with LSU's offense. And I think, you know, the strength, maybe probably the best position room, you know, on this LSU team as a whole is probably those defensive linemen and pass rushers. And I, you know, just we don't see McClendon and Broderick Jones and Amarius Mims get beat on speed rushes very often, or bull rushes for that matter. So I think Georgia will be able to protect Stetson Bennett, and I expect the playbook to be much more opened than it has been in the last few weeks. I think Georgia will spread it out early and take some shots downfield, and I think it's going to be fun to watch. I think Georgia wins 41-13.
Mm-hmm. What you got, G Foss?
I say 38-10. 38-10.
All right, I got to get Trigger Trays. I'll contact him, but I'm going to go 31-17. I don't see us covering this game. I think, again, we just choke people out, you know, methodically choke them out. I would love to see us dominate as we did earlier in the year in Atlanta over Oregon. I would love to see the playbook open. We don't know how much we could see A.D. Mitchell. I guess he has been practicing a little bit more, which opens up the pass game a little bit more. Arian Smith flying downfield. We saw a little bit of him last week. I think the playbook just opens up a little bit more. Kendall Milton looks to be running a little bit more healthy, so therefore you got a full complement of backs, which I kind of like where we've gone to more of a two-back system, because I think Kenny McIntosh getting a lot more touches has looked better behind that offensive line. So, but I'm not sure. You just never know what's in Kirby's mind and what's in the mind of this team. Because, again, you also don't want to give up so much tape if you are dominating a game going into the college football playoffs as well. So I'm going to go 31-17, Dogs. But, fellas, that's it for the night. Unless anybody else has got any shout-outs, any thoughts about anything else, we can get ready to get up out of here and get ready to – well, George, you going to the game, so, I mean, heck, man, you know.
Yeah, me and Pop's going – you know, yeah, he finally, you know, that Rona took him out for the Tennessee game. So, you know, he got 2 days to make it the Saturday healthy. so we could go to this one. So,
yes, sir.
That'd be good. And I'm waiting on a great outcome.
Facts. Me too. But if that's it, fellas, let's get ready to get up out of here. As always, we'll see you at 100 Sanford, and go Dogs.
Go Dogs.
Go Dogs.
All right.
Thank you for listening to the 100 Sanford Podcast. Tune in weekly to hear fresh content from the 100 Sanford Podcast every Thursday, but also with some pop-up shows every now and then as news breaks. You can also follow the content on our website, www.100sanfordpodcast.com. And email us at dogs@100sanfordpodcast.com. Lastly, reach out to us on social media streams. For Twitter, it's @100sanford, but on IG, TikTok, Facebook, and other accounts, it's 100 Sanford Podcast. All right, folks, that's it. And as usual, see you at 100 Sanford.